Okay, so we're starting the book of Yehoshua. The book of Yehoshua is unique. Chazal tell us that the book of Yehoshua is the one book that we would have received with the Torah, irrelevant of whether we had sinned or not. The other books were a product of our downfalls. So we needed the other books to help us perfect ourselves. The book of Yehoshua has an eternal message. The book of Yehoshua is about the conquest of the land of Israel. And I don't know to tell you what is the eternal message in the book of Yehoshua, more so than the other books of Nevi'im and Ketuvim. I don't know. We will study the book, but we do have this message from Chazal, that had the Jewish people not sinned, so then they would have received the five books of Torah and Yehoshua. So there is something eternal about the book of Yehoshua, almost on the level of Tanakh, almost on the level of Torah, and different than the rest of the books of Tanakh. So let's begin. Who is Yehoshua? Yehoshua is the son of Nun. Who is Nun? So there's a medrash that says that when Yehoshua was born in Egypt, his parents had been barren for years, and they couldn't conceive. And then, when the mother finally conceived, the father had a dream, and he wouldn't talk to her, and he was crying, and he was upset, and the mother kept coming back to him and saying, "What are you all upset about? We're finally pregnant." And after badgering him, he told her, "I had a dream, and in my dream, I saw that this son that we're going to have would come back and kill me and marry you, and that's why I'm so upset." So they didn't know what to do, and when the baby was born, they put him in a casket in the Nile, and no sooner had the baby been put in a casket, a fish came and swallowed the baby and swam away. And the couple went home weeping, not knowing what to do with themselves. And that fish was caught by Pharaoh's fishermen shortly thereafter, who sliced open the baby, and found the baby crying inside. They found a baby, they brought him to Pharaoh. They said, "A miraculous baby here. A fish just gave birth to a crying baby." So the kid was brought up in Pharaoh's palace, and he didn't see that he was miraculous. He seemed normal to himself. But he always heard the story that they found him in a fish. The word fish in Aramaic is nun. So Yehoshua bin Nun, Yehoshua the son of Nun. As he grew up in Pharaoh's palace, Pharaoh appointed him to be his chief executioner. And one day, the man who was his biological father was found guilty by Pharaoh and sent to be executed. And Yehoshua unwittingly executed his own father, doing the task of the executioner on behalf of his adopted father, Pharaoh. Now, the custom in Egypt was that the one who executed on behalf of the king was entitled to take over the deceased person's wealth and wife. And so Yehoshua, after executing his own father, goes back to his home to take the wealth, his father's wealth, and the wife. Well, he comes into the house, and the woman looks at him, and as he stands there, he starts vomiting all the milk he had drank as a baby that wasn't his mother's milk. So he's vomiting, and he looks at her, and he says, "You're a witch. Why am I vomiting like this?" And she says, "I'm not a witch, but I know who you are, what you don't know." And he draws out his sword, and he says, "I'm going to kill you. There's no reason I'm vomiting like this." And she says, "But let me tell you who you are." And she tells him the whole story, and then he connects the pieces together, and he realizes that what he was always told, that he was born from a fish, well, that's why he was born from a fish. She tells him the story. "Your father had this dream. Because of the dream, he put you in the Nile. You were swallowed." And I guess the fisherman caught that fish a second later. And now you did kill your father, and you came to marry me. And with that, Yehoshua discovers his Jewish roots, and comes back to grow up and learn by Moshe, who takes the Jewish people out of Egypt. Yehoshua is his faithful servant who stands by Moshe's side. And before Moshe is about to pass away, he asks Yehoshua any questions. So Chazal tell us that when Moshe was about to die, Moshe pleaded his case. He argued. He said, "God, I don't want to die. Lo amut ki yechye. I want to live. I can continue praising you." And Hashem said, "Avraham Avinu died, Yitzchak died, Yaakov died, all the great patriarchs, all the great people in history died." And Moshe said, "Yeah, but I'm better than them. I have an answer. I'm better than Avraham. I didn't do what Avraham did wrong. I didn't do what Yitzchak did wrong. I didn't do what Yaakov did wrong." And every time God says, "You should die just like so-and-so died," Moshe says, "Yeah, but I did better than them." And each time Moshe has an answer until finally God says, "I created a world where people have to die. You're going to die." And Moshe says, "I don't want to die. I want to continue praising you, Hashem." And finally, after pages and pages of arguments back and forth, we have it recorded in the Medrash, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Okay, I'm going to show you. You can live, but Yehoshua is going to be the leader and you're going to be the student." Moshe says, "Fine." So the next day, Yehoshua gets up in the morning. Moshe stands up by his tent. Yehoshua comes out of his tent. He sees Moshe standing there in attendance. He says, "Rebbe, what's going on?" Moshe says, "Well, Hashem said I could continue living on condition that I respect you as the leader and I'm your servant. So I'm here to serve you." Yehoshua says, "What?" Moshe says, "Yeah, God said, this is how I could stay alive, if I respect you as the leader. So I'm here to be your servant. So Yeshua accepts, okay. And then Yeshua goes to the tent, to the Mishkan, and he gets prophecy. And Moshe asks him, what did God tell you? And Yeshua says, Moshe, when you were the leader, did you tell me everything God told you? God didn't tell me to tell you. And Moshe stands there and he says, you're not going to tell me what God told you? And Moshe stands there and he's jealous. He says, I want that closeness to Hashem which you have and I don't have. And he turns to God and he says, I want to die. Let me die. I'd rather die 100 deaths than sense what I just sensed, to be jealous of someone else. Moshe, in his humility and kindness, had never been jealous. So he said, God, I'd rather die 100 deaths than be jealous the way I am now of Yeshua. And Moshe concedes he's going to die. But before this whole story, when Moshe was still at his prime, so Moshe asked Yeshua, do you have any more questions? And Yeshua said, no, I think I got it. And Moshe felt very bad. And Chazal say that Hashem punished Yeshua for that. And that after the 30 days of mourning over Moshe's death, Yeshua had questions and he had no one left to ask. And Yeshua turned to Hashem and said, God, give me the answer. We forgot 3,000 halachos. And Hashem said, no more. Only Moshe could turn to me and I'd give him the Torah. Torah's done. Now Moshe's dead. You got to go figure it out yourself. Start working on the Torah and figure out the answers from within the Torah. And that's how the book of Yeshua begins. Moshe passed away and God tells Yeshua, Moshe Avdi Mit. My servant Moshe is dead. And you're the leader, but you're not Moshe. I'm not going to give you the answer. Torah is no longer in heaven. Now it's yours. You got to figure it out. Yes?
Is there a reason why Moshe and Yeshua had such bloody natures? Murderous.
Why do you think they had bloody... Where'd you get that from?
You have Yeshua in his past jobs. And you have Moshe, and there's the midrash of the people came to paint, draw Moshe's face. And you know what I'm talking about? And then he brought it back to the king. And
No. It doesn't say it about Moshe. Look in the Shita Mekubetzes and Rav Haigon, they bring it as a philosophical story and not about Moshe.
Well, he did kill the Egyptian.
What?
He did kill the Egyptian.
He saved someone's life. A Jew was being beaten to death for nothing. The Egyptian had violated the Jew's wife, and then he was beating the Jew to death. So he saved his life. He had no choice, yeah? What'd you say? You could have what? Okay. So Hashem tells Yeshua, you're going to cross the Jordan into the land of Israel. And your responsibility is to conquer the land of Israel. Yeshua will falter at this responsibility. He will think that it's in Israel's best interest that he should prolong the period of conquering Israel so that he can be around and guide things. And in fact, instead of rushing to do the job, he doesn't. And that's why he will pass away, leaving the job undone. And it will take centuries. And we will have so many enemies and so many Jews will die because Yeshua did not follow through on his task of conquering the land of Israel. His intention was, so long as I'm doing it, God told me I'm not going to die till I'm done. So I'll prolong my life and it'll be to the benefit of the Jewish people, which was true. So long as Yeshua was alive, the people didn't sin. But in fact, he shouldn't have done it that way. So Yeshua is told, be careful, you got to learn Torah day and night. From Yeshua we learn this concept, you're supposed to learn Torah every day and every night. V'agita bo yomam v'layla, the commandment to learn Torah day and night, is written here in the beginning of the book of Yeshua. So Yeshua gathers the policemen and he tells them, tell the people, in 3 days we are crossing the Jordan. And he goes to the tribe of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, and he says, remember the deal. You guys have to help us conquer the land of Israel. And they say, for sure, we are with you, and anyone who tries to rebel against you will die, but you have to be faithful to the Torah. From here we learn the concept that he who rebels against the king gets the death penalty. Where do we get this idea that Mored b'Malchut gets someone who rebels against the king can be executed? From here. The people of Israel tell Yeshua, anyone who disrespects you will die, but they tell him on condition that you are strong which our tradition is they were telling him on condition you're strong in Torah. And that's what will happen centuries later in King Saul's time when Shaul is king and he orders his generals, kill the city of priests, the city of Nov of Kohanim. And his top general says, no. And he says, I'm the king, I just told you to do something. And his general says to him, his own relative, Avner Ben-Ner, tells him, you're our king so long as you keep Torah. Now you're telling us to kill innocent civilians. And when Yeshua was given the right as king, that no one would rebel against him, that was provided that he's in line with Torah. And you're making a mistake here. You have no right to kill this city of priests. And so his top two generals refuse. Avner Ben-Ner and Amasa Ben-Yeter. They both say, you're the king and you could kill us. But we will not listen to you to kill them. Because the king does not have a right to tell us to do something against Torah. That concept we learn here. Rak Chazak Ve'ematz. Bini will talk later. I want to cover five chapters. So Yehoshua sends two spies. Now where are we camped? We are on the eastern side of the Jordan, just opposite Jericho. And next week, Be'ezat Hashem, we will do what we do every class. We will begin our class with a map. Every week we try to develop the map. We draw a simple map and it evolves in sophistication as the year goes on. That way we learn the map of Israel. So on the eastern side of Israel, we have the Jordan. And just north of the Dead Sea, we have the city of Jericho inside Israel. And outside Israel, we have a place called Shittim, corresponding to Jericho. And we've been camped there since the final half a year of Moshe's life. We've been camped there. And from there, Yehoshua sends spies into the land of Israel. Now, next to the Jordan, there is a city called Jericho. Not to be confused with the city we have today called Jericho. The city of Jericho in the days of Tanakh was a city that was lying just by the Jordan. Now, the Jordan has places where you can cross it without miracles. And in order to protect Israel, all the nations were counting on Jericho to be the city which would protect the entrance to the land of Israel. Chazal tell us there are three keys to conquering the land of Israel. The first key is conquering Jericho. The first hurdle you have to cross in order to conquer Israel is Jericho. And so Yericho, which had such wonderful fruits that you could smell it across the land of Israel and into the Mediterranean, as it says in Josephus, that's why it was called Yericho, because you could smell the persimmons growing in Yericho on the western side of Israel into the Mediterranean. The ships that would sail into the ports of Israel would smell the fruits of Jericho, and that's why they gave Yericho the name Yericho from the word Reach. So Yericho was one of the capitals of Israel. And Yericho has its own king. And Yericho has a woman of ill repute who is one of the most beautiful women who ever lived. Her name is Rahav. Now in ancient times, being broad, being wide was considered beautiful. When Chazal want to tell us a woman was beautiful, they tell us she was two houses wide. That's their way of saying she was gorgeous. In ancient times, the broader a woman was, the more beautiful she was. Yeah?
So, we did quote a Gemara where it was Rav Papa, and there were a couple of rabbis, Elizabeth and Shimon, who were
corpulent, yes.
Were they actually corpulent, or were they just very nice looking?
I think both. In those times, being corpulent was beautiful.
Rabbi Yochanan, is he called fat?
I am unaware of him being right. There are different types of beauty. There's symmetry, there's beauty, there's... So Rahav is one of the most beautiful women that ever lived. It says if people would just say her name, they'd get so excited they'd spill their seed. So the Gemara says she was one of the most beautiful women that ever lived. So she had a huge clientele, but she was a high-class woman of ill repute. All the kings of Israel would frequent her house. Now, they didn't want everyone to know they were coming in. She had a window, and the window was just by the wall, and you could climb in through that window, and that's how she kept her business running. So the Pasuk says that's what she's called, Rahav HaZonah. So you hear about a woman like this, and you tell yourself, boy, what a not nice person, right? Chazal tell us she did tshuva. We're about to learn about that. She is going to ultimately marry Yehoshua bin Nun, the great leader of Israel. What a great tshuva she did. So Yehoshua sends two spies. He sends Kalev and Pinchas. And they come to the city of Yericho. And when they come to the city of Jericho, they climb up to this woman. You know, I guess there were instructions down there. If you want to come, you better pay this fare, that fare, whatever. They climb up to her house. Now, that's a house where I guess strangers could come in and no one would ask any questions. And word gets out to the king that strangers came from the desert, from the people of Israel, from across the Jordan to Rahab. Now, the king of Jericho was one of her clients, like all the other kings. So he sends his men, and he's sure that she's on their side. And he says, you know, the guys who just came to you, they're not regular clientele. These are people who have come to spy out the land. Give them over. So what does she do? She tells the two spies, she tells them, come quick. She hides them. She has flax, branches of flax on her roof. She hides them under those branches. And she tells the king's men, she says, you better run quick because those guys have already been here. They've already left. They're headed back to the desert. You better catch them. They left just before you closed the gates. Now, the king's men, they don't entertain the thought that Rahab isn't on their side. They figure she's one of ours. Why would she lie to us? So Rahab doesn't deny that the men came to her. She's very smart. She says, you're right, they came. But they left. You better catch them. So the king sends his men and they run and they're pursuing no one, right? All the way till the Jordan. And meanwhile, she tells the two men who came to her, the two tzaddikim, Kalev and Pinchas, she says, business has been terrible. No one's coming to me anymore. No one has the might to even think of coming to me because everyone's lost all excitement in their life because they all think they're dead. They're all so scared. All of Israel, I'm telling you, I know all the kings in Israel, they are all scared stiff. No one's coming to visit me anymore because they're all scared. They're so scared, they don't have their male prowess anymore. They can't. She says, I'm telling you, I know. And you guys should know, God is on your side. We all heard the miracles, and we all know that you're going to conquer the land of Israel. Everyone's hearts have melted, and you're going to be successful. But promise me, I saved you. I helped you. Promise me that you'll save my family. Promise me that you'll save me as I've saved you. And they tell her, fine, but there's a deal. You have to leave this red string hanging outside your window, and don't bring other people into the house. If you keep your end of it, if all of your family is in your house, then we will ensure that you and your family are protected. You won't die. But if you don't stick to it, if you're wandering the streets, or if you bring into your house other people who are not part of the family, then you've undone the deal. So it's up to you. And she lets them down the window and she says, make sure to run the opposite direction so you don't bump into the soldiers as they're returning. Wait there for 3 days and then come back. And as she lets them out the window, she says, God, I've let down so many men out this window for inappropriate things and I want to do tshuva. Let this act be my first step in a tshuva process. I want to come back to you. Let me back. I don't want to continue this lifestyle. I want a different lifestyle and this will be step one. And so her tshuva is accepted, as we know. And the spies come back to Yoshua and they say, we're winners. It's over. Everyone's scared of us. God's given them in our hands. And notice their faithfulness to Yoshua. They don't report to the people. They come back to Yoshua. The people don't even know the spies have gone and come back. Now, when the spies went into Israel, they made believe they were deaf and that they were selling pottery. They come into Israel as pottery sellers. And all they've checked out is Jericho, but they have the information they need. And this brings us to the point where Israel will approach, in these 3 days, they will approach the Jordan. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will learn about the miraculous crossing, how we entered Israel, and that first week in the land of Israel. Be'ezrat Hashem, that's next week.